The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Friday, January 14th, 2022. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me, and I guess we'll start with the biggest surprise from the past two nights. It was a West Coast overtime thriller. Final score, Oregon 84, number 3 UCLA 81. Mick Cronin's Bruins, they closed as 10-point favorite, still five-game winning streak snapped by an Oregon team that is 58th at KenPom, 78th in the net. So that's a quad three loss dead leg. Where were you when UCLA took its first quad three loss of the season? I'm assuming asleep.
No, I was in my living room sitting in the dark watching on TV, man. Lights off, TV on, locked in. I was locked in until Gonzaga wrapped that puppy up last night. So
I was asleep. Long day for me. Don't fall asleep till 3 a.m. on Wednesday night. Got a 6:30 wake up call. Fly back home, do a radio show, see the kids, wife. I was out pretty early last night.
Understandable, completely. Because you're up a lot the two nights before. I got us covered here. I was locked in. We had a lot of West Coast flavor across the board on Thursday, and then a lot of late night tips between games like this, and even stuff like on CBS Sports Network where San Francisco just wiped the floor with LMU and kind of reinforced the idea that the WCC really does have a top four. As for this game, we're starting to get a little bit of a clearer picture, maybe a little bit on UCLA as we speak this morning. And we've crossed the halfway point threshold of the regular season. UCLA sits at 25th in the net. Now, the results-based metrics, because UCLA doesn't have a high inventory of games, it just has played fewer games than most other teams in power conferences because of its lengthy COVID pause, it still ranks well there. KPI, Kevin Paga Index, which only evaluates teams based off of what's happened this season. Everything's in the rearview mirror. There is no predictive quality to it whatsoever. It says UCLA is the number 11 team in the country based off what it's done, and then strength of record, which is another very good empirical analysis tool that is results-based, has UCLA ninth. The predictive ones have started to fade a little bit on the Bruins here. 14, 15, or 16 in KenPom, Sagarin, and BPI as of this morning. I still think we need more. It was good on the Ducks. Dana Altman gets his 700th win. The Ducks had six players score in double figures, so led by Jacob Young, had 23. So that's a bit more like it with Oregon. You know, it's not a stunner that Oregon wins this game. Oregon was a team we expected to be a major player in the Pac-12. Hasn't been that to this point. But maybe this is going to be different. 84-81 in overtime. UCLA was fortunate to get it to the bonus session to begin with because, in fact, I think it was Young who had that brutal pass underneath his own basket that allowed UCLA to cut the margin from 6 all the way down to 0 in the final 32, 33 seconds of regulation. So even getting it to the freebie session there for UCLA with no fans in attendance, which I think has something of an impact overall. But good on Oregon. UCLA is going to have a chance, obviously, play, you know, the way the Pac-12 goes. You've got the travel partner. So Oregon State will be next on Saturday. And I think the win's probably more about Oregon. But we have had a little bit of the Pac-12's top three, two of the three at least, stumbling a bit. Arizona had no issues with Colorado on Thursday night, but earlier in the week, USC dropped from the ranks of the unbeaten. It actually kind of vomited on its sleeve for the first half of that game against Oregon State on Thursday before getting it together and winning by 10. But we've had UCLA and USC, which had separated themselves from the rest of the conference. Now they've taken on some losses. Maybe Oregon can make it a bit interesting there. We'll have to wait and see. maybe chalk this up a little bit to the fact that UCLA also hadn't played in almost a month. This was its second game, and it takes a competitive loss nonetheless.
I believe it was their third game back. Third game back from a nearly four-week COVID pause. You mentioned the lack of fans. I believe the number I saw was 119 relatives of coaches and players were allowed inside Pauley. That's it. And Mick Cronin was asked about it afterwards, and he said, it doesn't help, but I don't want to make excuses. But yeah. it's a real thing. Like, having home court advantage in college basketball is a real thing. Watch Auburn play a home game. Tell me that doesn't matter. And watch Gonzaga play a home game. It matters. And when you suddenly don't have that, whatever gap might be there between you and your opponent is a smaller gap. You mentioned it's not a stunner that Oregon beat UCLA, and it's not in a broad sense. I mean, it's Oregon. It's Dana Altman. They're back-to-back Pac-12 outright champs. But this Oregon team was a 10-point underdog, and this Oregon team hasn't been very good. Now, they started 6-6 with losses to Stanford, Arizona State, St. Mary's, BYU. Also lost to Baylor and Houston. Obviously, nothing wrong with those, but a Stanford loss isn't great. Arizona State loss isn't great. They're now 10-6, but the resume is rough. 1-5 in the first two quadrants, and they've got that quad three loss to Arizona State at home. So maybe they're turning a corner a little bit. And long term, I don't think this is that big of a deal for UCLA, because I'm assuming it's a quad three loss now. That'll be a quad two, as we move forward, because I'm just going to assume Oregon's going to get better. And perhaps that blemish that looks not great today won't look as bad tomorrow. And I don't mean technically tomorrow, but, a month from now, 2 months from now. But, not a great development. And, from what I could tell, reading about it this morning and a box score, UCLA, it was just one missed opportunity after another, and they didn't get a lot from – I mean, Juzang was good. He was 23 points, 9 rebounds, but Jaime Jaquez, it was, 4 points, 4 turnovers in 32 minutes. Got to get – he's somebody that some people thought would be UCLA's best player this season, even better than Juzang, who was, a consensus preseason All-American. And he's good, a legitimate NBA prospect, but he was not good against Oregon. Juzang, we haven't talked about, as I was prepping this morning, and I realized I haven't even thought about Johnny Juzang in a month, maybe. We haven't talked about him because they were on that COVID pause, and they haven't played, big games lately, and barely at all. Statistically, he's basically having the same season he had last season, averaging 16.6 points, 5 rebounds, points and rebounds slightly up, shooting percentages nearly identical. So if you wanted him to take a jump and be NCAA tournament Johnny Juzang from start to finish, that hasn't happened. But his third year in college looks, statistically a lot like his second year in college.
Yeah, I don't think at this point Johnny Juzang is near the All-American conversation, which right. is interesting. You mentioned his stats are basically flat year over year. Not great, not terrible, is what it is. But UCLA is going to have to probably win the Pac-12, and Juzang is going to have to be better to get into that conversation there overall. But we'll wait and see what happens in the next couple of games here for UCLA. I don't have a lot of concern. Oregon State next, then on the road Utah, Colorado. We'll know UCLA is what it was billed to be in the preseason if it can peel off 3 in a row. There were 2 on the road. It's not going to be easy, but I think it's good enough as the talent to do it. So we'll wait and see on that. Real quick with Altman, he hits the 700 win mark, and we had mentioned this a couple of times, I think just over the years, about Altman specifically, because, frankly, he's very, very good coach, has come certainly with some controversy during his time at Oregon and numerous sexual assault allegations over the years with some of his players. The administration stuck by him, so he's still there. He's at 700 wins. He joins this group of coaches. I was curious to just refresh my memory on this, because I think people didn't realize, because he just doesn't, he's not a great quote, out on the West Coast, spent much of his career not in a power conference. So I think he's kind of quietly gotten to a level where most coaches, can only dream to be. You get 700 Division One wins. That's not the top tier, but it's the tier right below it. Here are the other ones ahead of him that have gotten to that point. Don Haskins, legendary former UTEP coach. Ray Meyer, DePaul. Rick Barnes is ahead, active. Obviously, Norm Stewart, Jerry Tarkanian, Bill Self, John Calipari, Fogg Allen, John Beilein, 754. Then you got Hank Iba, Edgar Diddle, Western Kentucky's legendary coach, who was there from 1922 to 1964. And then you get really near the top end. Again, this is D1 wins. Lou Henson, Lute Olson, Lefty Drizel, Eddie Sutton, Adolph Rupp, Dean Smith. Shouts to Cliff Ellis, still at Coastal Carolina, encroaching on 900 career victories. I love that, man. Bob Knight, Roy Williams. Once you get to Knight, you're at the 900 level. So Knight, Roy Williams, Bob Huggins, Calhoun, Boeheim, and then Coach K. Those are all the coaches in men's Division I basketball that have at least 700 wins. And after Thursday night, Dana Altman can now claim to join that group. If you want to know who the closest behind him is, you want to do a quick trivia time?
I do want to do a quick trivia time.
What active coach is the closest to 700 wins right now? I'll give you a hint. He is in a power conference.
Active coach, close to 700, power conference.
Yep.
I'm going to say, that's not a good guess. I'm going to say, Jay Wright?
Not Jay Wright. One more.
Yeah, I'm going to take one more guess. Is it, has Tom Izzo already got there?
Tom Izzo has not got there.
My official answer will be Tom Izzo.
Okay. Tom Izzo is not the answer. The answer is one Jimmy Larrañaga, who is encroached. He is less than 30 wins away from hitting 700 all time. So good on him. Bowling Green, George Mason, Miami. I don't know if they're counting his time at American International as well. I'm referencing Wikipedia here. Anyway, good on Dana Altman and the Ducks. Maybe they make it interesting. 10-6 overall. Got to see more. And I'm with you. I think that will ultimately be a quad two, not a quad three loss for UCLA.
Dana Altman also now 13-9 all time against UCLA. Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
There were some other interesting results Thursday night. One of them was Iowa 83, Indiana 74. Iowa's now 12-4 overall. Just 2-3 in the Big Ten, but no bad losses. The four losses are to Purdue, Illinois, Iowa State, and Wisconsin, all ranked teams. They've now got wins over Indiana, Virginia. So the win column lacking a little bit. But that's one of the teams I thought in the preseason might be a little overrated, if you will, by the computers. And yet, it's January 14th, and I think they're about where most of the computers thought they would be. Again, lacking big signature wins, but they're on the verge of the top 25 and one. Like, they're not going to be in there on, today. But they're right there. And what was wild is they win this game with Chris Murray.
That's right.
Getting 29 points. Not Keegan Murray.
Not Keegan. Chris. Yes.
Chris Murray gets 29. His twin brother is leading the nation in scoring at 23.9 points per game. And Chris goes out and puts 29 on Indiana. What a family.
I was watching this, and I don't know who was the play-by-play. Raph was the color analyst on this game. And at some point, I think Chris got to like 22 and the announcer had mentioned, and Chris Murray's at 22 and I was watching another game and doing another. My attention was not solely on Iowa, Indiana. And I thought, okay, he must've messed up. And then he got to 24. I was like, he's saying Chris Murray's at 24. Like, what's he doing right now? And then I locked in. I was like, okay, it is Chris Murray. How about this? Finishes 29 points, 11 boards, 3 blocks, 3 steals. And Iowa pulled away late. It was a pretty good game until the final 3 or 4 minutes there. And then Indiana did not have the gasoline to keep it close. So credit to them. I mean, this is a nice turn of events for Iowa. I think they've got the looks, I don't know, a respectable 6 seed right about now. How about this? So Iowa, they're 0-4 in quad one, 3-0 in quad two. So when you combine both, it's a 3-4 mark, and they don't have a bad loss, as you mentioned there. I don't know where this team is going. I'm ready to declare that I was certainly wrong. I thought that Iowa was going to be in the NIT and kind of safely in the NIT. I didn't think it'd be flirting with Dayton, and I didn't think it would be poor enough to be outside the National Invitational Tournament, but I didn't think it would be securely heading toward the NCAA tournament. I now think that will be the case. I've seen enough here. Hawkeyes, they don't turn it over. They shoot well. Number 3 ranked offense in the country. Now, they need more high-end wins, and they're looking at roadies against Minnesota and Rutgers upcoming here. But let's just play it for fun. Like, yeah, 2 months from now, tournament starts 2 months and a day from now, by the way. What's your guess? And then an Iowa fan, remember this, and then just remind us to see how right or wrong we were. I'm going to say Iowa, when we get to the tournament, mark me down, the Iowa Hawkeyes, 8 seed. What's your guess?
In that range. I was going to say 7.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 7, 8 seed somewhere in there. But like, you know, that's better than I thought in the preseason. I'm with you. Like, I was like, they lost a lot, including the National Player of the Year. I did think Keegan Murray would take a leap. I didn't think he'd lead the nation in scoring. But, you know, I remember talking to somebody from Iowa back in the offseason about Keegan specifically, you know, emerging as a legitimate NBA prospect because of the size and the way he can guard in space and sort of a combo forward in theory at the next level. And, you know, if he could, you know, consistently make the 3-point shot, that would be the thing that gets him into that situation. So here we are. But I didn't think this team would be, I didn't necessarily think it'd be an NCAA tournament team. So if you start there as the baseline and I say, I think now looks like they could be a, you know, 7, 8 seed. That's a great job by Fran McCaffrey and that coaching staff. I got nothing to back this up. Just throwing it out there. Mm-hmm. These are identical 6'8 twins. How do we know?
Okay.
How do we know Keegan just didn't put on Chris's jersey and go out and score 29? Just for fun.
I can tell. You can't tell the difference? They're identical, but you can still tell the difference ever so slightly. But
I'm just saying, if you're not suspecting it.
He's trying to help his brother out. That's what you're saying, right?
Trying to get his brother drafted too. What if he switched jerseys every game and they were both like really good Murrays and then they both got drafted, but amazing. Only one of them was Keegan.
Would be an incredible story.
That'd be a hell of a story, wouldn't it?
We can dream, man.
And I'm just saying, if you weren't looking for it, you might not notice, right? If you weren't looking for it, you might not notice. Best twins in college basketball since Morris twins? Lopez twins?
No, since I'd say, oh man, Lopez twins were really something else. Are they the best since the Morris twins? Are they? That's a good question.
Has there been Collins twins?
Who?
Jason and Jerron.
Yeah. Stanford really had the market cornered on twins there for a while.
I got one for you.
Who we got?
You don't know about Ronell and Donnell Taylor.
Nope.
UAB Blazer twins?
Yeah, I knew someone. Andrew and Aaron Harrison.
Oh, that's a good one. I forgot about the Harrison twins. Yeah.
But not – wait. Were Andrew – this is ridiculous. Were Andrew and Aaron – I can't remember if they were identical twins. They were.
They look pretty close.
They look pretty close. I'm trying to picture them in my head right now. But the Harrison twins, I think, is the answer. I think that's it. Yeah.
Harrison twins.
Harrison twins.
Did they?
Yeah.
Did they cost Kentucky a national championship by coming back to school? Debate.
That's a conversation for another time. I mean, that's.
I'm just kidding.
All right. Any other thoughts on this one, or a quick tour around the Thursday before we pick the games here?
Pop us around Thursday.
Okay, just real quick. So Gonzaga just dominates BYU. Not even close. You were asleep for it. Gonzaga looked. I thought it was a statement game in a lot of ways. GP. It wins 110-84 over BYU. Gonzaga's first game of consequence in almost a month. WCC play, and yeah, it's on the home floor, but I thought this was an important outcome. Gonzaga now, it's only two games into league play, but it is averaging 113.5 points a game in West Coast Conference play. It's going to play on the road Saturday against Santa Clara, which is a top 80 KenPom team. We'll see what happens there. I thought, you know, we mentioned how Johnny Juzang isn't, hasn't been in the All-American conversation. Drew Timmy was the preseason consensus national player of the year, and he definitely has not been in that first team conversation. Probably not even the second team, really. Like if you look at the names that would be in that conversation overall, Keegan Murray.
It's all Big Ten players. The All-American needs Big Ten players.
Chris Murray and Keegan Murray. Let's just start with those two.
Start with them.
Start with those two, and then the list really begins. And then you've got, what, E.J. Liddell, Coburn, Travion Williams, Oscar Tshiebwe, Johnny Davis, Trace Jackson Davis has been really good. You've got Ben Mathurin at Arizona, who I'm just kind of vamping off the top of my head. And then I think that's where maybe Timmy was entering into the call. I thought last night was a statement game. He was 13 of 14 from the field with 30 points, and he went to the bench, I think, with like 6 minutes to go. In fact, with like five and change left in the game, Drew Timmy, Julian Strother, Andrew Nembhard had combined for 72 points at that point. At that point in the game, those three players had outscored BYU, which had 70. Okay. Gonzaga was so good last night. This is from Stats Inc. Gonzaga had a player had 30 points on 90% shooting. Timmy, who shot like 92 and change from the field. He's one of only, I think, like 46 or 47 players in the past 12 or 13 seasons to have 30 on better than 92% shooting. They had a player with 20 and 10. Nembhard had 20 points, at least 20 points and 10 assists. They had someone with 20 points. This is, again, Stats Inc. with the stat. 20 points in under 25 minutes, Julian Strother, and a player with five blocks, Chet Holmgren. According to Stats Inc., Gonzaga is the only D1 team in 25 years to have all those statistical accomplishments happen in one game. And again, it came against a legitimate opponent. I thought what happened Thursday was about Drew Timmy reasserting his place in the overall hierarchy of men's college basketball. No, he's not the player of the year front runner. And I'm not even saying that he right now would be my pick for a first team All-American candidate, but I thought it interesting because of pauses and because Gonzaga hadn't played relevant games. Timmy had just drifted a little bit. And last night re-announced how great he can be. And he was great. I mean, he was scoring in a variety of ways and getting easy buckets near the hoop. It was an impressive performance. I know you didn't get to see the game because kids and all that stuff, and you had to conk out early, but I wanted to at least talk about how good Gonzaga looked, because I thought that was a message across the WCC and across the country.
You ready for the final 4-1?
Yeah, the only other one I was going to mention was Johnny Davis was bad, 4 of 18, but it didn't matter. Wisconsin beat Ohio State. Tyler Wall had 20. Brad Davidson had 25. And
yeah, I was able to watch that one. That one ended before my bedtime. So
Davis, I just thought it was a good sign for Wisconsin. I know you talked about Johnny a week ago, yeah, when you were doing the preview pod with Cobb there. I thought it just Ohio State's still a quality team, and they did not need a great game out of Johnny Davis, and they still won definitively. So I thought that was a really good sign for Buck.
No, Wisconsin's legit. Like, I'm on them. You know, I've got them, I think, seventh in the top 25 and one. I won't be surprised if they win the Big Ten. I think if I had to pick, how about this? You got to pick a Big Ten champion right now. Who are you picking?
I'm picking Illinois.
I could see that.
Illinois. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to say, we're not picking the Illinois Michigan game, but I got a couple of notes on Illinois when I give you the other games to know. I'll share a few things. But Illinois would be my pick to win the Big Ten right now.
Yeah, I think I'd go Michigan State. Max Christie starting to play better. You know, I think he's averaging like 16 in his last four games. Had a nice performance a couple of nights ago that allowed Michigan State to avoid an upset. So the Spartans are 5-0, Illinois is 5-0, and then there's Wisconsin at 5-1. So, yeah, Illinois is a totally reasonable pick to win the Big Ten. I think I would go Michigan State, but if it ends up being Wisconsin and Big Ten Player of the Year possibility, Johnny Davis, that wouldn't surprise me either. Final 4-1, you want to update us on the records, Nada?
What do we got, Nada?
I feel like I'm surging. It was nice to take the lead last week.
Well, you did kind of well. You went 500, GP. You went 500. The current records, Parrish, you're at 13 and 18. Norlander didn't participate last week, so he's 19 and 13. And then David Cobb, 6-2.
Turns out Cobb's better at this than all of us.
Not surprising in the least. Not surprised. 6-2. And he's and now, I mean, I'm sure he's going to factor into at least one more Friday episode, but he's sitting pretty. Win percentage situation going on with Cobb right now. Dominating. Destined to, that's why you need a game minimum threshold here. A game minimum threshold. Final 4-1. Let's preview this weekend. Parrish is going to give you the first four. I got one in my back pocket. What are we starting with?
Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern. Number 22 Tennessee at number 18 Kentucky. Inside Johnny Juzang Arena. He played there.
All right.
Just didn't get enough minutes. So now he's out on the West Coast, taking losses to Oregon late on a Thursday night. KenPom has it, Kentucky minus 5. You can watch it on ESPN. What do you think, Deadleg?
Feels like Kentucky should win this easy, doesn't it?
I feel like you're gonna wager on Kentucky making the court report look intelligent. And so you need another double-digit victory. So you're going to lay these points. I know what you're doing.
I would enjoy if another double. This is where it might end, though. But as we mentioned on the previous pod court report, yes, this Kentucky team has won every single game by at least 10 points. And is when it wins, it's by more than 26 on average. And Kentucky's win margin, when you factor in the negative results with the losses, Kentucky ranks top 4 in overall win margin in the sport this season. I'm going to take Kentucky to win and to cover. I don't think this will be double digit, but it's certainly possible. Sheboy right now ranks number 1 in defensive rebound rate, is number 2 in offensive rebound rate, and he is the KenPom number 1 player in his player of the year algorithm at the moment, which tends to skew and slant toward big men, just so you know. Certainly Sheboy has a case. I think Coburn's right there with him with Johnny Davis. We have a wonderful player of the year race emerging right now. Maybe we'll focus that discussion in a episode in the near future. I will go with Kentucky at home. And a quick shout out to Kentucky SID Sports Information Director Eric Lindsay. This will be his final game. He is leaving Kentucky Athletics after more than a decade to continue working in the PR field at Kentucky, just in a different field altogether. But he has been a quality SID. He will be missed. Shouts to Deb Moore, who will take over. This is very inside baseball, if you will. But I want to give him a shout. You're an SID at a program like Kentucky. That's really one of the most challenging jobs in all of college athletics, frankly. I'm talking like top 5 because of the sheer size of the beat there and the national relevance and the coach you have and the players you get. So that's a very coveted gig on that side of our industry there. I'll take Kentucky to win and to cover. I hope this is competitive. I'd really like to see Tennessee. Kennedy Chandler step up in a big spot here. But yeah, Kentucky to win by more than 5 and less than 10 is my pick.
I don't know what to do with Tennessee. I like them, but they have problems scoring sometimes. I wouldn't have assumed that because they've got an NBA point guard and a lot of veterans. Like, that's usually a pretty good combination. NBA point guard, a lot of veterans. Let's be good offensively. And they're just not. They're 58th in offensive efficiency. In 2 of their 4 losses, they've been held in the low 50s. They're just 3-4 in the first 2 quadrants. One of the few, maybe the only, team with a losing record in the first 2 quadrants that I have in the top 25 and 1. but I'll take the Vols plus the points here. Kennedy Chandler's my little homie from Memphis. How could I wager against him? I couldn't.
Okay.
Not in good conscience. I could not. Saturday. This is game two. Saturday, 12:30 p.m. Eastern. I had these out of line.
Love it.
Shame on me. Maybe I got it. Maybe I wrote down 12:30 Central because I was in the.
Time is only a construct, GP. It's fine.
Whatever. It's Saturday at some point. You guys can look it up yourself. I don't have to do everything for you. You can figure out what time the games start without me. All of you nerds got apps on your phone.
Okay. It's turning in a hurry.
Yeah. You know, why do I have to do everything? Let me double check this score situation. I mean, this time.
I got it. Do you want to say it? Because I got it.
No, I want you to say it. Tell me what time this West Virginia Kansas game tips.
Saturday.
Okay.
In the afternoon.
Give me a time.
2:00 Eastern on the Network of Stars, CBS, America's most watched network.
This is the one I needed.
Get this tip right. That's all I'm saying.
I needed to get this
right. West Virginia at Kansas, going to be at 2 Eastern on, again, the Network of Stars. That's CBS. You can watch it, again, on CBS. Kansas, the KenPom line as we record this on Friday morning, is Kansas minus 11 at home against the 13-2 Bob Huggins coached West Virginia Mountaineers. A little bigger than I would have thought. Where are you leaning, Parrish?
How did I type 12:30 when it's clearly 2? You doing HQ tomorrow?
Oh, you know it.
I'll be there with you.
Can't wait.
It'll be just like this, except we'll be dressed more appropriately. Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern, West Virginia at number 9 Kansas inside Billy Preston Fieldhouse.
There we go.
Billy Preston, former Kansas Jayhawk, who never actually played for the Kansas Jayhawks, also the fifth Beatle.
And I'm wearing a Beatles shirt. How about that?
How about that? That was one of the most enjoyable parts of the documentary for me. Like the things that made me smile was watching Billy Preston walk into that room and do what he did. And the Beatles are just blown away by him.
John Lennon wanted to make him the fifth Beatle.
Yeah, Paul said it's hard enough with four.
He did. I know. He said it's hard enough to get this done.
Yeah. But like John was like, I want him to be like he sits down. And it truly is amazing.
You feel it. Yeah, you can feel the difference in the room. And there's a whole, again, alternate universe where the Beatles never broke up and Billy Preston joins the group and they have this incredible career into the 70s and maybe 80s. Yeah, that was awesome, awesome stuff. And that Rhodes keyboard, oh, tasty.
He just sits down and like you immediately hear. What was wild is we've heard that keyboard forever. That's the way we know the songs. Like I've got a feeling we know that keyboard. That's the only way we know those songs. But to be able to watch the Beatles hear that keyboard for the first time,
yeah.
And it happens where Billy Preston just sits down and they're like, "All right, let's go." And it they light up in a way that I don't know they had previously been in those sessions. I love Billy Preston.
What about the Kansas Billy Preston?
Should have never wrecked that car. Single car accident. Wasn't it a single car accident? We found out like 20 minutes before the Champions Classic he wasn't going to play.
Yeah, remember that. Last time I saw Billy Preston, that one, never saw the other one, was Final Four San Antonio. He was walking around the mall like shopping for something. I don't know, just randomly.
That's what people do at the mall. What else would you do at the mall?
Bizarre occurrence because Kansas was actually in the Final Four. Preston wasn't on the roster. At least I don't think he was. Anyway, we should pick this game. Man, a lot of points there, Parrish.
Yeah, there's a lot of people saying you screwed up the time.
You sure?
Let's get this right. Game starts at 1:30 Eastern, 12:30 Central. So that's what I did. I typed in 12:30 Central accidentally. I already told you I was sleepy. Let's do it again. Saturday.
Incredible.
1:30 p.m. Eastern. West Virginia at number 9, Kansas, inside Billy Preston Fieldhouse. KenPom has it. Kansas minus 11. You can watch it on CBS. It's America's most watched network. It's the Network of Stars. Third time's a charm.
KenPom's got this game at 2:00. let me down.
Get it together.
Brutal. Pomeroy. Get it together.
That's what I paid $19.99 annually.
What are we doing?
$19.99 annually to get incorrect tip times?
Don't make me start referencing Torvik and Evan Maya on the reg on this thing now. Get it together, Ken. Come on now, buddy. Love you. I'm gonna take West Virginia to cover in this spot here. 13-2, GP.
I got him in the top 25-1. Who are you talking to?
The two losses have come by double digits. Neutral against Marquette. At Texas on New Year's Day was a 15-point loss there.
Tash Sherman didn't play. Doesn't count.
That's correct. Tash Sherman did not play. But he has been on the floor as of late. Scored 13 earlier this week in a win over Oklahoma State. That was at home. West Virginia has done well against a quality team on the road in recent history. One at UAB, a UAB team that I think is going to be the auto bid representative out of that conference USA. So Kansas to win, West Virginia to keep it close. Keep an eye on how effective or not David McCormick is in this one. He has, as I wrote in the power rankings on Thursday, the thing that, in my opinion, is preventing Kansas from hitting that top three, top four level and staying there is how David McCormick is being used, deployed, how effective he can be or can't be. It just isn't quite there. That, in addition to, will Remy Martin play and be effective as well? I'll just take Kansas to win because it's at Fog Allen, but give me West Virginia to finish inside the number.
Yeah, number's too big, I think. And McCormick, like, to me, it's not a matter of how he's deployed. Just like, yo, you going to play or not? You know? Like, he started, I want to say, like, the first 11 games of the season, and then Bill decided to bring him off the bench, and he responded with, like, a 15-17 game. And you're like, okay, well, maybe something clicked. And then he more or less goes back to what he was before that. Yeah, it was 17 points, 15 rebounds against Oklahoma State. And you're like, okay, well, maybe we tapped into something. And then he follows that up with 4.6 rebounds. And then most recently against Iowa State, 1.4 rebounds. Like, yo, what are you? And for them to be a legitimate title contender, which I think they can be, they've got to guard a little better. They're like mid-30s in adjusted defensive efficiency, according to KenPom. If we're going to trust those numbers, who knows these days, you know?
Yeah.
And McCormick's got to be better. Not All-American good, but he's got to be consistent. You shouldn't be able in a week span to have a 17-15 game and a 1-4 game.
True.
Kofi Coburn would never do that.
Can't see it.
I can't see it either. Neither one of the Murray twins would ever do that.
Maybe one of them.
One of them might. Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern. We think. Number 21, Texas. At number 15, Iowa State. Inside Craig Bracken's Coliseum. KenPom has it Texas -1. You can watch it on ESPN+. Plus. Poor Iowa State. Them dudes got picked last in the Big 12, and so they're like, yeah, you're going to play Texas on ESPN+, Plus, bro. Ranked on ranked on ESPN+. Plus. It's fine with me.
At least it's not the Longhorn Network, so I've been spared here. I'm going to be able to watch this one.
Anytime something's on the Longhorn Network and you need it, just FaceTime me. I'll show it to you.
Hey, if you ever, ever, ever need an Oregon State-Colorado game on Pac-12, you just give me a call. You understand, buddy?
All right, we got a deal.
Okay.
We have a deal. Wait till I call you at 11:30 on a Thursday night to catch the last 3 minutes of Oregon State, Colorado.
Oh, man. Big spot here for Iowa State. Dropped three of its past four. Has that win over Texas Tech. Texas Tech, by the way, also won again, beat Oklahoma State on Thursday night. And now it's at home in a spot. Go out and win this game, Cyclones. Get it done defensively and kind of regain some of that mojo and that momentum. Texas dropped a game on the road last weekend against Oklahoma State, came back, rebounded well against Oklahoma in a game I didn't see a second of, because again, Longhorn Network, thanks a lot. I think this will be a low scoring affair. I'm going to take Iowa State Yeah, this is an Iowa State straight-up situation. I know you said the spread's only one here, but I will trust. I know three of the past four have been losses. I get that. But two of those were close against Baylor and Kansas. And defensively, I still believe in what Iowa State is. I don't think that's going away. I think that Iowa State has a really good shot at basically being in every game it plays for the rest of the season because of how well TJ Osselberger has built up this team on that end of the floor. It is going to lose a lot of games because it's just going to go cold and not even shoot 40% from the field. Maybe that happens here, but I think it could also have that impact on Texas, which is far from an automatic offensive team. And Texas already likes to play slow. So I'm going to lean with Iowa State having the home floor, the game probably being in like the mid-50s with 2 minutes to go, and giving Iowa State a chance because of that. I'll take them to win straight up. Cyclones win to get to 2-3 in Big 12 play.
Like you said, 1-3 in the past four, but the losses are Baylor, at Oklahoma, at Kansas. They had a shot at the buzzer to win at Kansas, just didn't go in. Like, it was good luck, just didn't go in. Iowa State's still 4-3 in quadrant one, 5-3 in the first two quadrants. I'm still a believer. This is a wrong team. This is a classic wrong team favored situation, Deadleg. This is what I like to call a wrong team favored situation.
I feel like you're hitting at like a 22% clip when you proclaim this. So now I'm not feeling good here.
I'm hitting it like a 22% clip regardless of what I say. Okay. It's a wrong team favorite situation we've stumbled upon. Cyclones went straight up inside Craig Bracken's Coliseum. Saturday, game four, 2 p.m. Eastern, Arkansas.
Are we sure?
You know what? At some point, the listener is going to have to learn to figure out when the games start on their own. In fact, we shouldn't.
It's not on us to inform you, okay? Just so we're clear, it's not our responsibility to
make. No, it's not. It's our responsibility to make your drive go a little faster. We're not here to tell you what time everything starts. You can figure that out on your
own. Qualify as a weekend preview segment. We might not have the right teams or the right times.
Yeah. But like you can trust we'll probably have the right day. If we tell you Kansas and West Virginia are playing on Saturday, you can trust that it'll happen on Saturday unless COVID gets in the way.
Exactly. We don't even know if this game's getting played. Let's be real. We're talking about this game purely as a hypothetical construct at this point.
Everything we say, every weekend preview is hypothetical. Sorry. You know what? Maybe we just stop giving tip times. Maybe going forward, I'll just say, you know, on Saturday, Arkansas and LSU are playing. You figure it out for yourself. You figure out what channel it's on and what time it starts. I don't have to do everything for. Sometimes I've learned this as a parent. It's the whole teach a man to fish or just keep giving him fish. I've been giving away.
Is that how that old creed goes?
I think it's something about you want to give somebody fish every day, or eventually you want to teach them how to fish. I'd rather teach people how to fish than keep. I've been giving fish for years. Just sitting here every Friday morning handing out fish. Okay. At some point, get your own rod and reel. Go catch your own tip times. I don't have to keep giving them to you every day. This is how I'm going to spend my life? Giving out fish every Friday morning? That's the way I got to spend my life? Put on a t-shirt and a hat. Give out fish all morning. Ridiculous. Fish. Get your own fish. Buy your own cork. What else do you need to fish? Get your own worm.
Oh, man.
Saturday. At a time you'll have to figure out on your own. Got it. At some point, I got to take the training wheels off, let you guys figure this out on your own. Arkansas at number 12 LSU inside the strong-ass offer assembly center.
Oh,
that's what it's called.
All right.
LSU minus 12. You can watch it on ESPN2.
Who won't be at this game?
Who will not? Oh, Eric Musse. I texted with Musk last night. Do you know how he got hurt?
I think he was like trying to run the offense for the practice squad for 2 weeks, and he tore his rotator cuff.
No. So I texted him last night. And for people who don't know, he had surgery yesterday morning and is not going to coach at LSU this weekend. He said that they were doing closeout drills, and one of his players landed on him in a closeout drill. And he tried to coach through it, but, like, couldn't instruct with two arms anymore in practice.
We have a dead arm situation again.
It's a dead arm situation. And, like, you know, obviously just the pain for day-to-day stuff, like, you know, lying down and trying to go to sleep. And it just became, like, listen, nobody wants to have mid-season surgery, but it was not realistic for him to be effective at his job and get through the season without having the surgery. Told me he also coached in Venezuela one time with a torn Achilles. So he's coached injured before, but had to have surgery yesterday morning. He will not be inside the Strongest Offer Assembly Center on Saturday afternoon.
And it might have been last season or the season before, but I did something about on Arkansas. And so I talked to him, and he had another issue. Like, he had, like, something with his hip. Same deal, man. Practicing with the team was, like, kind of grinding through a season, even though he was injured. Dude's 56, 57 years old. More credit to him, man. I'm going to take.
See, that's the problem with staying in incredible shape as you get older.
You trick yourself.
You trick yourself. See, look at me. I'm not tricking myself. I know who I am, what I am. You're not going to see me doing closeout drills. But guess what I can do? Move my arms however I want to. Look at that. Look at that.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? You know why I can do that? Because I don't try to get in closeout drills.
Yeah. I feel like you're still going pretty aggressive at the batting cage, though. Never know.
You saw me one time step in there, come out of retirement.
Pinging them.
I was.
Vegas, left and right. Pinging them. Good stuff. There's no way I can take Arkansas to be within this number. LSU has the number one rated defense in America. It has only lost once at, oh, by the way, Auburn. I got Auburn number one, LSU number two, power rankings, because these have been the two hottest teams and most impressive teams across the past few weeks in college basketball, not to mention the overall season-long record. So, yeah, I'm going to take LSU to win and to win big. Arkansas won't have its coach. It got a ridiculous win against Missouri at home, 87-43 on Wednesday night. Missouri was just vaporized. But
and then there was a fake Konzo Martin got fired tweet. Did you see that one?
It was sent to me when I was, like, making lunch for my kiddo in the kitchen on Thursday. And when you get, so I didn't know the person that had sent it, and I was like, I haven't heard a thing about this, but okay. And then I texted someone else. I was like, hey, what is this? And they go, that's fake. That's fake AF, as in as. Mm. And yeah, I don't know. Why are people doing this? Like, why is this a thing? You know, sending fake tweets. Like, who does this stuff?
Like, well, people who are bored.
What's the point here? Well, go look up some
tips. The actual point is to trick people.
Accurate tip times if you want to waste your time.
The point is to trick otherwise reputable people, which it did. Like, the way it got tweeted into my timeline is because somebody I follow retweeted it.
That's how it got sent to me, is because someone of prominence tweeted it into their timeline, and that prompted this person to let me know and texted me the tweet. And so, right. Anyway.
If that's your goal, to trick people, you did good job.
It's true. I'm going to take LSU to win and to win big here.
I'm going to take the Razorbacks plus the points. LSU is awesome, by the way. Like, number one in adjusted defensive efficiency. Tari Eason's great. LSU's really good. I mean, they have one loss, and it's to the team I have ranked number one in the top 25 and one. So I think LSU wins the game. I'll take Arkansas plus the points. They rally around their fallen coach to stay within the number, not to win. They just rally to cover the big number.
All right, before we get to the fifth game, a quick tour here. We actually, for those watching live on YouTube, hello. If you have not already, please click the thumbs up, the like button, and help us. You continue to help the channel grow. We appreciate you. And thank you for joining us on a Friday morning. So tonight, we have a couple of good mid-major matchups, A-10. Davidson at Richmond. Davidson, 12 straight. That's a good one at Richmond. That's a good one. And then VCU at Bonnie's. 7:30 tip there. Bonnie's kind of don't kind of, they need to win that game. If St. Bonaventure doesn't win against VCU, its case to be an at-large team is going to be disintegrating all the more. VCU's actually been the better team to this point in the season there. And then the big one on Friday is Michigan against Illinois. It's a game years in the making, 9 o'clock on Fox Sports 1. These teams did not meet up as scheduled a season ago. Illinois fans have been salivating for this opportunity here. Michigan's in a very desperate spot. Illinois has won 12 straight games against Big Ten opponents and is 19-1 in its last 20 Big Ten matchups there. Trent Frazier has been averaging 17 points a game over his last seven games. And, by the way, Illinois is the best offensive rebounding team in the country per percentage at 41.3. Alfonso Plummer, best free throw shooter. Illinois, just you mentioned, like, who would I pick? I'm going to take Illinois. Since the start of the 2020 season, 1920, Illinois has the most wins in Big Ten play by far. They have 34. Next closest, Michigan State and Wisconsin with 28, Ohio State with 27, Iowa 26. Michigan's not even in that top five. Relatively surprising. Illinois has been the best Big Ten program over the past three seasons, so that is a big one to watch, 9 o'clock on Friday night. And then other ones to kind of scan and keep an eye on for Saturday, as we've got an NFL wildcard weekend ahead of us as well. I'd say just watch out for Seton Hall at Marquette. Seton Hall got dropped by DePaul on Thursday, which hadn't won a Big East game. The Pirates' tournament resume, they'll still be projected to be in, but if they were to lose another road game, that would certainly be damaging. Alabama at Mississippi State feels like it could be sneaky close. That's a 6 o'clock tip on Saturday there. Florida's NCAA tournament resume can't afford to lose at South Carolina. That's a 1 o'clock tip on the SEC network. Gators were not able to close the deal or come back all the way against LSU. And I know Mike White is starting to feel some heat there. Wake Forest at Virginia, 4:30 tip on Saturday. That's a pretty good one there. Virginia has started to maybe kind of put it together here. Maybe lost, I understand, last weekend at North Carolina, but won three of its past four with two of those wins on the road and then beat Virginia Tech narrowly at home on Wednesday. We'll see what can happen there. Wake Forest, GP and I are in agreement that Wake Forest is probably setting itself up to be in the tournament conversation down the way. Getting a win on the road, though, would do wonders because Wake was unable to beat Duke at home earlier this season. And then Creighton at Xavier is a noon tip on Fox on Saturday. That's a wonderful game. Xavier was swept by Villanova this season. It was not able to beat Nova earlier in the week. And Creighton lost its game, as in didn't play its game against Providence because Providence is on COVID pause. That means the PC-UConn game that was scheduled for this weekend is not happening because PC is not off of COVID pause yet. So Creighton will get a chance to play for the first time in 10 days in a roadie against Xavier. That's a really, really nice way to start the Saturday off. A quality Big East game between two teams that I think are eventually going to the NCAA tournament. And then Oregon will play at USC. That's your late tip. So kind of bookend the day there. Creighton, Xavier to start it. End of the night, Oregon at Southern Cal, 11 o'clock, Fox Sports 1. If Oregon can win that game, then yeah, we can start talking about the Ducks being a viable at-large candidate. My game to pick Sunday, by the way, is pretty slow. In fact, I think we might be able, if you're up for it, I mean, we got NFL wildcard stuff happening. If you're up for it, GP, I'm good to do the podcast by like 4:30 on Sunday. What do you say? Or do you want to stick to usual time in the 7 p.m. hour? I'm good either way.
I want to check my tee time situation.
Okay, there we go. All right, here we go. Final game. By the way, Iowa at Minnesota on Sunday is probably the one game worth watching. But most of the stuff is Saturday, NFL for Sunday. We got a mid-major special here. Murray State at Belmont, 5 o'clock on Saturday. These are OVC rivals, soon to be Missouri Valley rivals, as CBS Sports first reported a little over a week ago. Murray State is now officially joining Belmont and going to the Valley next season. For now, this is an OVC matchup and a classic one. Both these teams will have a chance, Parrish, to have at-large cases. You realize Belmont is 28th in the net right now?
I realize everything.
Murray State 45th in the net. So they actually rank pretty well across the board, not across the board in every metric, but they're doing well. KenPom has this classic game line, Belmont -6 at home against Matt McMahon's Racers, the alma mater. This is at Belmont. So, I didn't think about a building name here. Who's our guy? Dylan Windler court.
Dylan Windler's uncle court.
Dylan Windler listened to this podcast, and because of that, Dylan Windler wound up at Belmont.
It was Dylan Windler's uncle.
Murray State is a 6-point dog.
Shouts to Dylan Windler's uncle. We did play a role. We played a role in Dylan Windler getting the Belmont.
We did, but I don't think you got time for that right now.
We did play a role, though.
We did.
I have all the respect in the world for Belmont. But this is John Morant's alma mater. What are we doing? You think John Morant's alma mater is going to lose while John Morant never loses ever? 11-game winning streak for your Grizzlies, dead leg.
Not my Grizzlies, and I do think that's what's going to happen. I got Belmont winning and winning big.
Except the Grizzlies. It's the most fun team in the NBA. They're young and energetic. They like each other.
They ain't playing in this game.
What if the Grizzlies were playing at Belmont this weekend? How wild would that be?
By 47.
Oh, boy.
67.
It would be something like that. I mean, hell, they beat the Lakers by 50 almost. I'll take John Morant's alma mater. I can't pick against anything connected to John Morant right now. He's a legitimate MVP candidate at the age of 22.
That's true. I discovered John Morant, by the way.
What? You did? Tell that story.
I didn't discover him, but I was the first one. Who cares? No one cares. When he was actually, like, he was awesome as a freshman and no one knew about him, like, I was the first one to kind of give him pub, that's all. And he was not known as Ja at that point. Like, his stats page was Demetrius Morant. It was not Ja Morant. So.
He got rid of Demetrius. Now he's just Ja.
That's right.
Well, I'll pass that along. I'm not sure if John knows that you discovered him, but I'll pass it along.
You don't need to do that.
I'm sure he'll send his appreciation. Are we done?
We're done.
Get out of here, then. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Steve Athoro, legend. Shouts to Larnell. Thank you guys once again for listening. I Own College Basketball Podcast, middle of the dumbest pandemic of my lifetime. Most recent PCR test, dead leg, negative. Negative. I'm evasive. I remain evasive for the time being. We'll see if I can keep it up. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can leave 5 stars at both places. Nice review would be nice. We'd appreciate it. Remember, there's more of us than there are of them. That needs to be reflected in the Apple Podcast reviews. People can get offended if they want to. Truth is, there's more of us than there are of them. Don't back down. Smash the like button. Do it with a nice rhythm. Brandon Davies would. We're going to talk to you again on Sunday at some point. We'll let you know when. Till then, take care.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.